time to get up and get your day started.
Get up! Get up!
It's Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Good morning, everyone!
Good morning!
Good morning! Good morning!
Good morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM, the first hour of Sports 56 Mornings is brought to you by Old Dominic Distillery in downtown Memphis. Now, here are your hosts, Greg and Eli.
Yep,
don't you dare hit that snooze button. It's time to get up, get your Tuesday started. Welcome into Sports 56 Mornings on this Tuesday, May 12th, 2026. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Ham with you. We're live and local broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Summer right around the corner. So it's time to get to those backyards and get them ready for the ultimate pool party. And they have some unbelievable deals going on over at Family Leisure with all in-stock patio furniture priced to move. In-ground pool starting at $49.99. Five-piece patio furniture set starting at $9.99. So on and so forth. Right down the list. Deals after deals after deals. You mention this ad, you get $200 off any pool or spa purchase. It's Family Leisure, 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Should be a spectacular day. It was extremely nice yesterday. Should be a duplicate today. 53 degrees currently, but it's going to warm up to 82 with plenty of sunshine. It's going to get warmer as the week progresses, but we have plenty of sunshine in the forecast for the rest of the week into the weekend as well. Right now, I don't see any rain in the forecast until early next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the possibility. That's always subject to change. Hour one of the program brought to you by Old Dominic Distillery at 305 South Front Street in downtown Memphis, producing Tennessee whiskey, bourbon whiskey, Honeybell citrus vodka, Formula 10 gin. Wow, they have not only some great spirits, but they also have a great bar. The distillery bar is fantastic. If you haven't been by, what are you waiting for when you head downtown for an event, maybe for dinner? Make sure you cap it off with a cocktail after or even before. Their award-winning craft spirits are waiting for you. You can celebrate your wins with a guided tour and tasting over at Old Dominic Distillery. For more information, go online to olddominic.com. Old Dominic Distillery, come for the spirits, stay for the experience. Cheers to Memphis. Cheers to what could be the end of an unbelievable career. LeBron James, is it over for him? The Lakers lose last night to the Thunder. They are eliminated. We will talk NBA playoffs. We'll talk NBA Combine as well. Lots going on in the world of basketball. How about Giannis Antetokounmpo, according to Shams Charania, could be on the trading block. Lane Kiffin had some interesting things to say about his old team and the city of Oxford, to be honest with you, in Vanity Fair in an article that just came out. We will discuss that on the program today. The NFL continues its slow schedule reveal. I believe the bulk of the schedule, all of it completed on Thursday, will be announced. But right now you're getting bits and pieces. We'll talk about that. Got some college baseball news. Parker Fleming is going to join us in about 20 minutes to talk about the NBA draft and what he thinks the Grizzlies should do. We'll have more on the world of the NBA later on in the program. And then Mickey Barker will join us at 9:05 to talk golf. It's the PGA Championship this week from Philadelphia, but lots to talk about with Mickey. We'll also have a special guest appearance from one of his friends, Scott Fleming, the architect of what will be the Audubon Clubhouse. He was the architect also of Pine Hill, so he will join the program. We got Humdinger's Trivia as well. It's Tuesday. You know what that means? A $25 gift certificate will be on the line to Humdinger's. That'll be coming up right after the 8 o'clock top of the hour break. We'll take your calls and texts on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines at 901-360-8255. There you go. That's your lineup. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. Fine.
Yeah?
Okay. Fair to Midland.
Weather's great.
Well, weather's fantastic. Can't ask for anything more than that.
No, when you can go out and play golf and not sweat to death, this is good for me. Bottle this thing up because you know the oppressive heat is coming. Jay Ham, how are you this morning?
Oh, I was good until you spoke about that oppressive heat. I'm not looking forward to it at all.
but we know it's coming, especially you.
Coming.
You're a Memphian.
Absolutely.
You're born and bred here. I've been here long enough. Eli's been here long enough. We know it's coming, but right now you got to take advantage of it. So here's the question. Did we see LeBron play in his final game?
It's very possible. Very possible. I always kind of felt like his wife was going to call him home at some point. But he's done so much. It's like if he wants to continue, I don't have a problem with him continuing either. Continue on, and if you want to hoop, go hoop.
LeBron James, Eli, as you know, last night, 40 minutes. The old guy played 40 minutes, scored 24 points, had 12 rebounds, still playing at an incredibly high level. The Lakers, a valiant effort. Again, they never had Luka in any of the games in the series, although that probably would not have made a difference. But they battled to the end. Thunder get them 115-110. They win the series 4-0. Thunder now 8-0 so far in the playoffs this year as they're trying to repeat as NBA champions. SGA had a cool 35, got to the free throw line 15 times, made 12 of them. And although they're still without All-Star Jalen Williams, how about A.J. Mitchell, who's been starting and he has been starring? 25 points and 4 steals. The Thunder beating the Lakers, not a surprise, but I'll ask you that question. Is it possible? And I'll give you my thoughts in a second. Is it possible? I guess it's possible, but did LeBron James play in his final game?
I don't think so. He's just, to me, he's playing at still too high of a level for him to call it quits. I think he'll play at least one more year. Where that is, that I don't know. I'm not sure where that might be, but I don't think he's ready to call it a career yet. I just think he's playing too good a basketball to stop now.
His son, Bronny, talked about his dad playing at this high level and said, obviously, it's his call, but he can see him playing for a number of years because he's still that good, as we've talked about. I think LeBron James is absolutely coming back for another year and maybe more, but I think he's coming back for another year because I still think LeBron James wants a goodbye, a year where everybody says goodbye to him. I just think he does, and I don't know the guy personally, but it just doesn't seem like it's LeBron James if he goes out without fanfare. I think he deserves it, and I think he'll get it. Maybe he'll announce, I got one more year. Now he's a free agent. I don't see him going full circle going back to Cleveland, because if he goes back to Cleveland, then he leaves his son. Unless there's some type of deal where the, and I don't even know what Bronny's, two-way deal, does he have a two-way? Or he's got a standard contract.
Standard contract.
So I don't even know if he's under contract. Anyway, I just don't see LeBron, if he plays one more year or two, playing without Bronny. So I don't think he goes back to Cleveland. I think it's wishful thinking by people in Cleveland. And plus, the Cavaliers, they're still in the playoffs. Do they even want him? I think LeBron will end up signing back with the Lakers. And I don't think his career is over. But if it is over, when we find out, we'll properly salute it. One of the greats of all time, not only in the NBA, the argument of being the GOAT, but as far as great professional athletes in the history of sport, he is way, way up there. So we'll find out in due time. Hopefully he's quick with an answer as opposed to like an Aaron Rodgers.
Well, you ain't going to get a quick answer by any means.
Probably not. But it's not like he has to do it now. But before too long, he'll have to do it. Of course, LeBron is a huge story, but so is the Thunder, who will probably start to take them for granted. They're just great. And Lakers gave their best effort and still wasn't good enough. Except, I guess for those who bet the Thunder and the point spread was, what, 10.5? You finally lost. You won 3 games. They covered each and every game, but you finally lost one as they only won by 5.
I give the Lakers a lot of credit. I didn't think they had much fight left in them. I figured this was kind of just going to be a formality, and especially when that, even after the good first half, in that second half when they went, you know, the start of the third quarter, they were over 6 minutes without scoring. I thought this was going to look like the second halves of the other games where the Thunder just pull away and dominate them, but Man, that fourth quarter was as entertaining a basketball as you could possibly ask for. I mean, it was both teams throwing haymakers. I mean, just big-time shots. A.J. Mitchell was incredible. His ability to finish at the rim is crazy. I mean, he is scooping them up from every angle, and you know, then he hits the one big three. He had the play where he just abused Marcus Smart and sent him to the floor and like jumped over him while scoring. Again, that dude's making less than $3 million next year. And then they got a team option for the following year at less than $3 million for that dude who's going out and scoring 28 and ultra efficient in the playoffs. Like, he could be the best bargain in the NBA by far over the next couple of years, the way he's playing right now. It's but the end there, obviously LeBron got a great look. Couldn't get that to go. And then, of course, you had the play for the Lakers down by three with J.J. Redick making the weird decision to take Rui Hachimura out of the game and putting Maxi Kleba in, who had not played all night. I guess the explanation was they wanted him to be a screener, and he's a better screener. It didn't matter because whoever it wasn't going to get the ball anyway, because it was either going to be LeBron or Austin Reeves, and Reeves ends up getting a decent look, and it doesn't go in. But that's just a weird decision to me, because you're letting the defense – you're basically giving the defense one guy they don't have to worry about. Like, the defense – with Rui, like, the defense has to think, like, Rui's had a great game. I mean, Rui Hachimura was freaking, what, he had 24 points or 25 points. He made four threes. Like, if Rui's on the floor, the defense actually has to consider the possibility we can't just leave him alone. Like, they could go to him and he could hit a shot. With Maxi Kleba, they're like, the defense can go, well, they're not giving him the basketball. Mm-hmm. He's not shooting a three in this situation, so we right. don't have to worry about that guy. That guy does not matter in this play. Again, they end up getting a decent look, a look that I'm sure they're satisfied with Austin Reeves getting that shot off. But it's just a weird decision to me to give the defense the idea of there are only now three guys on the floor we have to worry about, because one guy's inbounding the ball, and we know he's not throwing to that guy to get the shot off. So we have three guys out here that the five of us have to actually defend.
No, I think that's a really good point. Hachimura, 25 points, was 9 of 15 from the field, 4 of 8 from 3. So you take him off the floor, you're right, there's less options you have to worry about. Reeves, by the way, had 27, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, but he turned it over 8 times. Between him and Marcus Smart, 14 turnovers between the two of them. LeBron had 4 turnovers, so the starters had 18 turnovers. But again, good effort by the Lakers, not good enough. The Thunder, as expected, roll into the Western Conference Final. And like the Knicks, which we talked about yesterday, they will wait a while to see who they're going to play. So I don't know if that's going to be advantage or disadvantage. Rest versus rust. We always get into that debate. The Knicks, the earliest they'll play is Sunday, and they clinched 2 days ago. And then last night again, the Thunder clinch. They have to wait to see who comes out of San Antonio and Minnesota. They'll play game 5 tonight. That series is 2-2. And Cleveland and Detroit is now 2-2 as well, because the Cavaliers at home, like they've done so far in the playoffs, win at home, lose on the road. Unfortunately, they don't have the home court advantage in 7 games, so they better figure out a way to win on the road to win the series. But they beat the Pistons 112-103 to even that series at 2. Big discrepancy with the free throws. 34 for the Cavaliers to just 12 for the Pistons. And J.B. Bickerstaff made it known he was not happy after the game about the discrepancy. Donovan Mitchell, 43 points. James Harden, 24 and 11 assists. The big difference, the Cavs going a 23-0 run in the second half and then again getting to the free throw line. Pistons also turned it over 18 times. Caris LeVert, there was a Caris LeVert sighting, guys. He had 24 points for Detroit.
I don't remember if it was Robbie Hummel or if it was Grant Hill, but towards the end of the first half, they were talking about Donovan Mitchell and said, he's going to have to find his game. here in this late in the second quarter and in the second half if they're going to win this game. I'd say he found his game. Dude, 39 points in the second half of that game against the Detroit defense. It's pretty darn good. Dude, that was, it was amazing to watch. Like, he, again, we've talked about Donovan Mitchell, and I wonder why he doesn't get more, like, talk around the league, and he hasn't ever gone to a conference finals, and that's one of the things. But you want that, like, that dude, that was special last night. That's just, that, I mean, that was just simply incredible, especially after the way, the how bad the first half was when he was 1-for-8. To come out and do that in the second half is insane.
He had a scoreless first quarter, so he was very quiet. And then just to watch him break down, it really took me back. I'm like, okay, he's having an Eric Sleepy Floyd moment with the 39 and a half.
Nice, you know, reference. So
it, because I actually remember that game as a, you know, as a young dude. But the way that this man can score against bigger defenders,
yeah,
the way he can slice through. One, he's got those long arms. His wingspan is like 6'8", and he's only 6'1". You know, athletic is all get out. It's just the way that he can just swing around, bring the ball around, uplift, just go over the top of guys, slice through. It's like it's an offensive masterclass.
Dude,
it's scoring for a small guard.
And it was funny that he had the chance to break the record, and that's the only free throw he missed all night. He's 12-for-12 at the free throw line for the night. Has one more free throw to break the record, and he misses that free throw for his only miss of the night. But it is like when he gets going like that. He's basically unstoppable.
He's like a four-level scorer at that point. He can just get to his spot. He can knock down the deep three. He can break you down offensively. And then he had his running mate start things off for him. James Harden came out cooking early. They got the tone kind of set for him. And then the run that they made in the second half, the 20-plus whatever it was, there's your game.
If you get this James Harden the rest of the series, and again, the whole – thing about game sevens with James Harden, but if you get this James Harden along with Mitchell doing his normal thing, they're going to be tough to beat. And I'll tell you another reason why in a second, but Harden, 24 points, 9 of 9 at the free throw line. He goes to the free throw line, Mitchell go to the free throw line. They're not missing, but he adds 11 assists. So he's scoring and he's facilitating, which he's capable of doing.
The scoring came early, and then he started getting the facilitation in about midway, and it was like, I'm like, he's having a great night.
Yeah, feed the hot hand.
In the second
Mitchell.
Half, it was just, get the ball to Mitchell,
yeah, and get the hell out of the way.
That's easy for anybody. I don't need the basketball. Give it to that guy. Let him do it.
And Mitchell's, he's capable of those types of explosions. But the other thing why Cleveland's in this position is – in their wins, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley have dominated Jalen Duren. Jalen Duren is such a key figure for the Pistons. He plays 27 minutes. He gets you 2 rebounds. You got Allen and Mobley and are not in foul trouble, that double dynamic duo. We've seen Duren have some good games and some bad games. He's very inconsistent so far in the playoffs. And Cunningham had an off night. 19 points.
It's a rough night all around for Detroit. They get to go back home tomorrow, though, so thankfully for them, they can try to, you know, get back in good graces with home cooking and try to get that advantage back. But I think it's going 7.
Right, and again, the Cavs, to win the series, are going to have to figure out how to win a game on the road. Tonight in San Antonio, the Spurs, a 10.5-point favorite. Victor Wembanyama will not be punished for the flagrant 2 that resulted in an ejection in game number 4. Timberwolves would rally and win that game over San Antonio in Minnesota. Wemby not even fined for that big elbow to Naz Reid's noggin, but Wemby is back, ready to go, and I imagine the Spurs will be ready to go tonight as well. Can Minnesota muster up the type of performance they need to go on the road and beat San Antonio? Well, the way Anthony Edwards played in game 4, I wouldn't bet against them, but I think it's going to be extremely tough.
Yeah, I would imagine Wemby's going to come out very motivated. The Spurs will be very motivated. And again, even with him being ejected and Edwards being great, everything else last game, it took everything for the Timberwolves to pull out that game at home. It'll be a tough one to win on the road tonight.
No, you're absolutely right. Game 4, Spurs were up. Even without Wemby, they were up late, and Minnesota came back as they were riding on the shoulders of one Ant-Man. So that's the only game in the NBA playoffs tonight, game 5. Like I said, 2 series already wrapped up. in the conference semis, and two more still to go, with San Antonio and Minnesota knotted up at two, and now Detroit and Cleveland knotted up at two as well. Later on in the show, we'll talk about Giannis Antetokounmpo. What's going on with Milwaukee? Is it real news? I imagine with Shams reporting that he could be on the trading block. Giannis Antetokounmpo, and where could he land? We'll discuss that. We'll talk about what happened at the NBA Combine yesterday, where they did the official measurements. Our friend James Fletcher is going to join us tomorrow. Wrote a story about the winners and losers. Wow, winners and losers from measurements. But that's where we are with the NBA Combine. They'll start to play games later. But again, the big names won't be competing. They're just doing the interviews and the measurements and all that good stuff. But when we come back, it'll be Parker Fleming. He breaks down the NBA draft. We'll get his thoughts on what he thinks the Grizzlies should do at number three. Again, our number one brought to you by Old Dominic Distillery. Go to olddominic.com. They have a list of all their whiskeys and spirits. They have a list of all their signature cocktails and instructions on how you can make them at home using Old Dominic Spirits. But again, when you get a chance, stop by the Distillery Bar downtown at 305 South Front Street. Swing by for a pregame cocktail. Celebrate your wins with a guided tour. If you haven't done that yet, it's a really neat thing to take the tour of Old Dominic Distillery. Old Dominic Distillery. Come for the spirits, stay for the experience. Cheers to Memphis. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Available locally on your radio dial as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, it's easy to stay tuned to Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by Old Dominic Distillery in downtown Memphis. Here once again are Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 7:25 is the time. Sunday, we found out that the Grizzlies moved up and will pick number three in the NBA draft. We got about 6 weeks until the draft. And we're going to have a lot of debate for the next 6 weeks, speculation, things of that nature. What should happen in the draft? Is anybody going to move down from one or two? What will the Grizzlies do at number three? We're excited about it, the possibilities, as the Grizzlies finally get a win in the NBA draft lottery. We always get a win when we bring this guy on the program. He is one of our two Flemings that will be joining us today as far as guests, which is sort of an oddity. Parker Fleming, he covers the Memphis Grizzlies. He covers the NBA as well at his Substack, Substack Elitist, and also puts together an NBA draft guide, which is terrific. You can follow him on Twitter at @Paka_Flocka. Parker Fleming joining us on the program. How are you this morning, Parker?
Greg, I'm doing great. I appreciate the kind words. And, doing great. I mean, look, the Grizzlies are starting this next iteration of Grizzlies basketball with the third pick in this really good draft. So, like, what more could you ask for?
It's a big off season, as you know. Number three, number 16, number 32. Things could happen. Trades could happen. We still got to see what happens with Ja in the offseason. But let's jump right into it. Okay, you haven't put the lottery guide together yet. But when you are looking at these top four guys and you rank them, give me the order you would rank the top four, and you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. My rank right now, I have Boozer one, and then really kind of flip-flop based off the week when it comes to Peterson or DeBonsta, and then I have Caleb Wilson four.
Wow, so you have Boozer number one. It's interesting because we had a lot of folks who called in, texted in, and gave us their opinion, and it's split. It's weird. It seems like it's either you know what you're getting in Carlos Boozer and Cameron Boozer there. You know what you're getting with him, solid. I mean, could be a double-double machine for you. Already he's ahead of his years, his numerical years, because he seems like a pro already when he played for Duke. And then you have the upside of Caleb Wilson, who is an athletic freak, who showed a lot of great things at North Carolina, but did also have the hand injury. So people will say, Boozer, he's not flashy. He's not exciting. I'd rather go Wilson. And then the others are no, you go for a surefire thing in Boozer. If it came down to those two, Devonta's off the board, Peterson's off the board, you're taking Boozer, obviously, right?
I'm for sure taking Cameron Boozer, yes. But I think it goes beyond just, like, you know, the sure. I even think the sure thing element. I think people do that and really kind of undersell what his upside can be. And I think that's just because, like, this is a guy. I think he gets miscategorized as this, like, post-up-centric big, when really he can do everything. He's a guy you could run pick and rolls with either as the ball handler or as a screener. He can come off handoffs or he can initiate handoffs. He can run ISOs. You can run him off screens. You can have him setting the screen for a guy coming off the screen. Like, he's a high-level passer. Like, his assist numbers really don't fall in line with bigs or forwards. They fall more in line with guards. Like, this is just a very high-level basketball player, and yes, he's not flashy, and, you know, his athleticism concerns, you know, I think the athleticism concerns that people point out the most are the finishing, but, like, he still shoots, like, 60% at the rim in the half court, and really, actually, only shoots 2% worse in the half court than Caleb Wilson. When it comes to half-court rim attempts. And then, but, like, defensively, yeah, I think he's going to have his learning curve that he's going to have. But, I mean, a few things with that. One, he's going to be about 6'9" in shoes and 250 pounds. And he's also, generated a good amount of steals because he is a smart basketball player. He's a good processor. But I actually read something interesting from John Hollinger, writer at The Athletic, former Grizzlies exec, calls it the Gasol theory, and just essentially saying that bigs that are good passers and have good feel, they tend to figure it out defensively, and they're good defensively because of their feel for the game. And he used that for his case to have Cameron Boozer at number one. And while, like, Caleb Wilson, you know, he has the flash, he has the athleticism, he's going to be a nightmare in transition. When he's engaged, there's literally no limits to what he can do defensively. Like, I do think he has a more fatal flaw with the outside shot. And when and this isn't even about, like, fit with Zach Edey, but when you have a key player, a guy that you're projecting to be your number one, potentially, like, if you're picking at three in this draft, you're anticipating picking a guy who is your number one option on offense. I think that is a fatal flaw for that guy, and it really puts a strain on team construction. And quite frankly, haven't the Grizzlies already done this with a number one option that can't shoot?
Do you believe that he, like, do you think the shot is, like, almost not broken necessarily, but he won't develop that shot even at the NBA level?
It depends on the extent of development. You can never dispel the notion that somebody can't develop their shot, because, you know, while we see when I scout, like, I see what I see on the court, but, like, I'm not in the gym with them for workouts. I'm not in the gym with them for practices. My blind spot is, like, I don't have the intel or the visibility into their work ethic and their workouts to know, like, okay, he's going to get there because he works his tail off to get there. But I do think, like, using priors, like, you know, his shooting dating back to, you know, before the NCAA, there's just never been a track record of him being a shooter. And, you know, that just, but, like, you never know. There's been outlier developments. But at the same time, you also don't want to take away from his superpowers of finishing at the rib, or like he knows how to rise and fire in the mid range. I know that's another element people like. So like I just think when it comes to which of these guys do I want to be a number one option on a team that can go far in the playoffs, I just tend to think Cameron Boozer's the guy. And it's really, and I know I said this on X after the draft lottery happened. I said, I'm going to like refrain from like any real debate, and by debate, not like, you know, rationalizing through like we're doing right now, more of the, you know, the stuff you see on social media where people are just kind of getting a little bit ugly over who's their guy and who they should pick and stuff like that. Because at the end of the day, this is a remarkable position to be in if you're the Memphis Grizzlies.
Right, yeah, right. All right, so we could see something strange between 1 and 2 with Washington and Utah. We know how much Utah would love to have DeBonsa. And certainly with Washington, they hold the cards. Maybe they look at Peterson over anybody. So if that was the case, you could see them maybe flip-flopping, and then Utah takes DeBonsa and they get Peterson, if they like Peterson that much. But we had Drew Hill on yesterday, and he was talking about a lot of the media writers and people in Salt Lake think that the Utah Jazz, if DeBonsa's off the board at 1, could take Cam Boozer, which to me seems weird because they already have 4 or 5 guys on the front line, from Lauri Markkanen to Jaren Jackson Jr. I don't know if Walker Kessler's long for Utah, but they have Kyle Filipowski. I don't see that happening, but they say that there's a strong possibility. And if you go with the old theory, best player available, and you think Cam Boozer's the best player, then they could take him. If that was the case and Boozer was off the board, now you have Peterson, Wilson. Where would you go there if you were the Grizzlies?
I would go Peterson, just because, I mean, even with everything that happened and transpired at Kansas, he was still one of the most productive freshman guards over the last 20-ish years. High-level scorer. It didn't really get to show because of the injuries, but like real three-level scorer that puts pressure on the paint, generates fouls.
Mm-hmm.
You can run him in multiple capacities as a shooter, high-level shooter when it comes to his accuracy and his volume. Even at like probably like 70%, he still generated blocks and steals at a high rate for a guard. I think my only worry is like, okay, where's the playmaking? Because at Prolific Prep, where he went to high school, like he did show improvement there, but like it declined at Kansas. And I do think, again, like there's a strain on team construction when you go from having your go-to guy as a strict two guard, or your two guard can function as a primary ball handler. You know, you're talking about like the Anthony Edwards, Devin Booker's, Donovan Mitchell's, guys of that realm. But like this is also, I said this when I watched him before he went to Kansas. Like this is arguably the best shooting guard prospect probably since Brandon Roy. Like he's that good. I know the health stuff's scary, but like that's, you know, again, I don't have those. I don't have that access. The Grizzlies do, though. The Grizzlies do, and the other teams picking in the top 4 do. And I do think that, you know, the Boozer thing is a fascinating component. Cause people will point out, oh, Carlos Boozer, his dad is a scout with Utah Jazz. But, like, and yeah, there's always just take the best player available. But you still need a pathway to make sense with your roster construction. And at the number 2 pick, you still need to, you got to have a guy that you can play with your guys. And, you know, it's not so easy just shuffling around when you have Jaren Jackson Jr. making $50 million. You have Lauri Markkanen making $45 to $50 million. you have Walker Kessler, who I think if they didn't want to pay him, like they wouldn't have dragged him into restricted free agency, they probably would have found a trade for him because he did generate a lot of trade interest over the last few years. So I just think, and then like all the mocks and stuff that I've seen so far, and granted, mocks are mocks, they're not gospel, but like a strong enough amount of sample that's suggesting that they'll likely just take whoever's left between DeBosta and Peterson. And this isn't like, let's also not rule out Peterson can go one. And that's a very real possibility. And you know, if AJ DeBosta's left it too, you know, Utah's probably doing some backflips, getting that guy that state of Utah has invested in AJ DeBosta significantly.
Yeah, that's why if I was Washington, I would play the game like we're going to take, we're definitely taking DeBosta, and if you want DeBosta and you want to move up, well, give us an asset and we'll do that. So, I mean, they're in a great position. Eli, I'm sorry.
Let's say that it is either Boozer or Wilson that they get, the Grizzlies get at number three. Then who are guys that you look at that as possibilities at 16?
Yeah, it's interesting because like my thing with like the 16th pick is I know people have been associating like guards because the Grizzlies are likely trading Ja Morant, and you know, I don't think a guard is that necessary, because also too, when you're talking about guards at 16, even if you're talking about like the range of outcomes, not just their ceiling, but like what those players are projected to be, like I don't see a gap between the guards available at 16 and Ty Jerome or Scottie Pippen Jr. or you know, even what Cam Spencer showed this year, or like whatever you're banking on Walter Clayton Jr. to be, because like I do think he's better than what he showed, and you're hoping that he can show that quickly.
He better be.
In summer league, yeah, for sure.
So you like, wouldn't take like if everything stayed chalk and there wasn't moves and the guys that we think are going to go early, those point guards are all gone. You wouldn't take like a Christian Anderson at 16. You wouldn't look at a point guard. You'd look at somewhere else, another big?
Well, the thing is, like, at least with like Anderson, and I think this is my thing too with the guards, I'd be comfortable taking a guard if I knew it had if the guard had size. But like Anderson's small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that third measurement yesterday, I did not think he was that small.
It was like listed a couple of inches taller, I think, in the media guide, but Yeah.
But no. That's mainly my thing also with picking guards in that range, because you have Christian Anderson, Bennett Sturts, Ibaka, Okori. Like a lot of the guys are small. Obviously, they could just trade up, and maybe you go get someone who's falling between Kingston Fleming's Mykal Brown, Braden Burry's. Someone like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, you know, of. Well, Parker, on that, well, along those lines, what do you think they would have to put up for a team to make a deal and come out of like the seventh or eighth hole, somewhere in that neighborhood, ninth hole? What do you think it would take?
Yeah. I would probably say, like, let's follow the blueprint that they moved up with before. In the 2021 draft, when it came to moving up to that 10th spot, they had cap space open from declining Justice Winslow's team option, and they essentially did the 17th pick, Jonas Valanciunas, for the 10th pick, Steven Adams, Eric Bledsoe. So one of those contracts essentially just flew into slotted into cap space. Mm-hmm. And then they also got that protected first round pick and ended up conveying to a second. That, like, you could potentially convince a team up near the top where you're like, hey, let's do some sort of trade where, like, you don't have to take a player back. We'll take on this salary because they have almost a $29 million trade player exception. Like, that's a huge difference for a team that could be getting out from an apron to getting out of the tax altogether.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That could be the difference between having cap space and not having cap space. Like, that's a big deal for a team, especially in today's NBA and the apron world and stuff. But I mean, look, like, let's all keep an eye on the Milwaukee situation, because, you know, while Shams Charania did say that they're open for business with Giannis trades, they also said they're open for trades to bolster the roster. Or who knows? Let's say Milwaukee still wants to stay competitive and they do some sort of, like, Jaylen Brown stuff for Giannis. Like, what if you do Kuzma and Portis in 10 for Ja Morant in 16? Like, that could be something.
Does Taylor want to trade with the Grizzlies and help them out at all?
Maybe depending on who's coming over. Sure, but yeah, no, that's going to be their pathway to trading up. I think it's going to rely on just taking back money.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. All right, my friend, we'll be talking to you, I'm sure, a lot coming up. As long as you're willing to do it, we love having you on, man. You're very knowledgeable. We appreciate it. We can't wait for the lottery prospectus to come out, your NBA draft guide, and, of course, Substack Elitis, which is a Substack that people can check out. Tell everybody about it. It's free.
It is free, yeah. Memphis Grizzlies NBA draft Substack Elitis. It's a lot easier if you just look on my Twitter at @Paka_Flocka. And as I teased yesterday, the third anniversary of the Substack is this week.
I have an announcement for it
that I'll announce on Friday.
Nice tease, brother. Appreciate yep. it. As always, Parker, thank you so much, man. You have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Parker Fleming, the first of the two Flemings that will be on the program today. When we come back, we'll tell you what happened at the Combine yesterday, but the measurements we kind of alluded to. You're tuned into Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by Old Dominic Distillery in downtown Memphis. Here once again are Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back. 7:48 the time. We thank Parker Fleming for joining us. We'll open up hour two with Humdinger's Trivia. So yesterday at the Combine, they did the measurements. And I'm going to go over some of those right now. There's a story which James Fletcher co-authored. James will be on the program tomorrow to talk about the prospects. But this article contains winners and losers. Hard to believe, winners and losers just from measurements. But here are the big four. A.J. DeBonta, 6'8.5", again without shoes, 6'8.5", weight 217, wingspan 7'1¼", and his standing reach is 8'10". Darren Peterson, of course, much smaller, but 6'4.5" he comes in at. Good size, 198.8", so basically a 200-pounder. Darren Peterson with a wingspan of 6'9¾", and a standing reach of 8.7". So good size for Peterson. Boozer, 6'8¼". 252.8 pounds. He has a wingspan of 7'1½" and a standing reach of 9. Here's what they say about Boozer. Cameron Boozer is among the winners up top, posting a 9-foot standing reach. Pretty impressive, as my internet goes crazy. And then for the fourth and final, we're talking about Caleb Wilson. Caleb Wilson is 6'9¼". That's what he measured. 210.8 pounds, a wingspan of 7'1" and a standing reach of 9 feet. They say Caleb Wilson checks all the physical boxes expected at the NBA draft combine. So then they say the winners, and jump in whenever you want, Eli, here. Mikkel Brown, Nate Ament, who measured at 6'9.5" with a 6'11.5" wingspan and a standing reach of 9.1.5. 9'1.5". Pretty strong. Jaden Quaintance, who did not play for the most part last year because of injuries, one of the winners as well. Ade Mara from Washington, from Michigan, who had a great season. Hannes Steinbach, Chris Senak from Houston. The measurement losers, Keaton Wagler, who measured at 6'5", 188, said still measured taller than many of the other guard prospects in the class, but the combination of wingspan and standing reach measurement do not jump off the page. Wingspan was 6'6.25", standing reach was 8.4. Kingston Fleming's also they have as a loser, only 6'2.5" height, 183.4 is weight. Bennett Sturts came in at 6'2.5" from Iowa, and then Christian Anderson, who I talked about, only 6'3". Texas Tech listed him as 6'3". And then Amari Allen from Alabama is the other one.
Yeah, the Christian Anderson thing was I can't believe he's that small, honestly. Watching him play, like I just thought he was, I would have never guessed he was going to be under 6'1". You know, the Kingston Flemings, I always wondered, like, Kingston Flemings to me looks small on the court, and it was always funny because people would talk about Acuff being small, but Flemings never kind of got that rap of being small, and it ends up that Kingston Flemings is only a half inch taller than Darius Acuff, and Acuff has a much bigger wingspan at 6'7",
mm-hmm.
which I think certainly for him that was good news. To measure at 6'7" on that wingspan helps certainly with some of the defensive questions. Again, there's a lot of defensive questions that does not solve a bunch of them. But at least, you know, with Fleming's a 6'3.5" wingspan at only 6'2.5", I mean, that is not good numbers at all for him as far as that is concerned. You know, Wagler, for his wingspan to be less than Darius Acuff's is also extremely surprising. That he would have a shorter wingspan than Darius Acuff, despite being 3 inches taller than Darius Acuff. But, it was for the fact that Mara is 7'3" without shoes. I mean, that dude, he's got a 9'9" standing reach. I mean, that dude basically in shoes can touch the rim standing there.
Right.
That's pretty eye-popping. Ament, certainly, really good numbers. I think with those numbers, again, obviously there'll be workouts and all that stuff. I think Ament could very well be a top 10 guy with that type of length and what he can do.
Doesn't this also solidify if anybody thought, well, let me go. And again, measurements aren't the end all be all, but with everything, taking everything into consideration, don't you think this puts a wrap on Acuff being the top of those guards? Don't you think he'll go before Wagler, Flemings, Brown, Burries, anybody else in that position?
No.
You don't think that he has measurements now that help him out?
Well, I mean, he's had a week. I mean, he's still 6'2".
Like, no, I know. I understand.
He's still 6'2". And again, there's a...
Well, Flemings is 6'2.5".
There's a lot of teams. Yeah, but I don't think Flemings will go before him.
So who do you think would go before
him? I think Wagler probably is still the top one of that group.
I bet you Acuff goes before any point guard. And I don't know if there's all kinds of trades and stuff like that and it gets crazy. I'm telling you, don't count him out. Don't count him out of being the fourth pick. Like somebody
he's
him.
He's not going top four.
I'm not saying top four. I'm saying the actual fourth pick. Acuff's going 4 or 5.
Fourth
going
pick, not top four.
I mean, I'm not saying he could go 1, 2,
you
gotta say 3.
1, 2, or 3.
I'm just saying he can only go 4.
He's not going top four. No way. He's not going over any one of those four guys. No team would.
I don't think so, but I'm saying he's going to be the first point guard. Out of doubt in my mind that he's going before anybody. That guy, I don't know what it is about him, but you want scoring. you're getting scoring. He's going to be able to score at the NBA level. He looks like a guy who's cold-blooded. I want the ball. Like, I don't know. I just love the guy.
My question is not his ability to score at the NBA level. That'll be fine.
No, he can't play defense, no.
Will it be conducive to winning, though?
As long as you got good players around him that play great defense, they can make up for him.
Well, if you drafted him in that high, they're probably not going to have those players around him. So that'll mean he'll kind of pretty much be like in a situation where we have a riot, and the looters in the riot, they're going to come up and grab all the TVs, all the stereos, all the little things. They'll score there. They'll score big numbers, but it won't be conducive to the win.
When they put those TVs on.
Again, I think all those guys, the teams will have them ranked in various orders. There will not be a consensus. Some will like the size of Wagler, just the pure height. There will be others who will have Acuff last just because of the defense.
The draft boards will vary.
Yeah, all those guys. Mikael Brown with that wingspan, everything else. Like, I think there's going to be teams that really like him with what he does shooting the basketball, too. I mean, they're all going to be in different orders, but. There is no way in the world I think a team would take Darius Acuff over one of those top four guys.
There's plenty of room for scorers in this league, so we have to have people to score.
From a fan excitement standpoint, Acuff is one of the top three or four guys in this draft.
Because we know he can put the ball in the basket.
Yeah, I mean, what we saw in the NCAA tournament, for people who didn't follow Arkansas basketball, they saw exactly what this guy is. He's Mr. Excitement. I'm not saying he's John Morant coming out with the big windmill dunks and the elevation. He's not. He's an athlete, but he's not John Morant athlete. But he's a guy who you're going to look at that and go, wow, you won't be able to take your eyes off that guy.
He doesn't have a lot of holes within his offensive game. He can shoot the deep ball. He can get to the spots he wants to get to. You know, handles the basketball well. Can get guys involved as well, too. So,
but there's going to be no debate about his offensive game. The whole thing is, there's a lot of guys that could score the basketball. Yeah. If you can't stop anybody else from scoring, we just watched what they did to Austin Reeves and how these teams will hunt guys that can't guard. And if you can't guard, they will find you and they will abuse you and have no problem doing it.
Especially if they can hunt you and your team can't hide you.
Yes, exactly. and I'll say, the Darren Peterson with that wingspan and everything else, even more. Please, I would be happy if one of those top two teams left him on the board for the Grizzlies. I would run faster than I thought I was going to run to that thing. Yes, give me Darren Peterson.
What did you think of
6'9" 3/4 wingspan for that dude?
I know. Okay. What did you think of Parker's evaluation of Boozer being the number one guy on the board?
He stuck to it from a straight basketball standpoint, where I like what it's something that he brought up, especially in regards to his measurements, too. He can defend, even with slower feet, he still has great basketball instincts. His basketball athleticism is on point. And with lining up with the rest of his measurables, and then when you look at him on offense, he can actually pull it out, go create his own offensive opportunity. He can shoot the jumper. He can do a little bit off the bounce. He's got a modern-day four game.
What's going to be interesting is, again, we get that best player available versus need. And everybody can see, looking at Utah, Peterson makes the most sense. They have a plethora of bigs.
Right.
But again, I go back to what Drew Hill said on the show yesterday, hearing from his fellow brethren out in Salt Lake City that write for the Jazz, thinking that they're going to take Boozer. That would be, again, best player available if that's the way they think, that Boozer's better than Peterson, Wilson, or anybody else, other than maybe DeBonsa, who would be already gone in this scenario, taken by Washington, that you would take Boozer. To me, I don't buy that. I just don't buy it. I mean, if you think Boozer is better, you can't think he's that much better than Peterson. And you have a need there where you don't have a need at the bigs. Unless you're thinking maybe we're going to make a big trade with one of the other ones, which I guess they would have to make room. But to me, if it's close, you got to go need. If it's close, but maybe they think Boozer, and this is just a guesstimate by listening to what Drew said about these other people out in Salt Lake City, that if he's that much better, okay, but I don't think he's that much better. I think those four are all in the same grouping.
When I look at the Jazz pick, I'm thinking Danny Ainge is making that pick, so he's going to make a sound basketball decision.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Humdinger's Trivia to open up hour number two, and then we're going to get into what Lane Kiffin had to say in his Vanity Fair article. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255.